fish in the sea. You know how I feel. River running free. You know how I feel.
Welcome to What She Said on 105.9 The Region. I'm your host, Candace Sampson. As May blossoms around us, bringing vibrant flowers and lush green lawns, it's a beautiful reminder of renewal and growth. This week's show captures that spirit perfectly, spanning topics from brain health and holistic skincare to transformative performances and sustainable living. Here's what's coming up. I'm thrilled to welcome Lynn Poslins, the founder, president, and CEO of Women's Brain Health Initiative. Lynn leads this crucial organization in its mission to address gender disparities in brain aging research, enhancing cognitive vitality through informed health education. Anne Brody is here with the latest Much Watch Entertainment, highlighting a big week on Netflix. We'll talk about Jerry Seinfeld's new movie Unfrosted, the buzzworthy series Baby Reindeer, and Jeff Daniels' standout performance in A Man in Full. In an exciting new two-part series in collaboration with New Roots Herbal, we begin exploring internal skincare. Dr. Dasha Leniva, a naturopathic doctor specializing in holistic skincare, joins me to discuss how our diet influences our skin health. I also have the privilege of speaking with Dr. Barbara Landau, a distinguished lawyer, psychologist, and mediator recognized for revolutionizing how separations are managed in Canada. Dr. Landau will share invaluable advice on communicating with children about divorce. And I'm pleased to welcome back Punita Chitwal Varma, a celebrated writer and food advocate. Punita will inspire us with her approach to low-waste, climate-conscious cooking with her new book, Good Food, Healthy Planet. Join me for an hour of enriching conversations and insights as we dive into these compelling topics together, right here on 105.9 The Region. In today's first interview, I'm thrilled to welcome Lynn Poslins, the founder, president, and CEO of Women's Brain Health Initiative. This pivotal organization is dedicated to safeguarding the brain health of women, caregivers, and families, focusing specifically on addressing the disparities in brain aging research between genders. Since its launch in 2012, the initiative has been instrumental in raising awareness and creating evidence-informed preventative health education programs to help prolong cognitive vitality. Lynn, thank you so much for joining me today to shed light on these crucial issues.
Thank you so much for having me join.
Could you share the story behind the founding of Women's Brain Health Initiative and what drove you to start this organization?
I was doing fundraising with a local charity here in Toronto. And I heard some disturbing statistics for women because women were more susceptible and are more susceptible to brain aging diseases like Alzheimer's, Alzheimer's being the biggest cause of dementia, with almost 70% of Alzheimer's sufferers being women. But research focused primarily on men. And I was at the stage in my life where I was starting to wonder, you know, where my car was when I was in the parking lot or where my cell phone was when I was on it. Then I was looking for it. And I said, well, who's looking after our brain health as we age if we're more susceptible? And I started fundraising for that organization with more emphasis on meeting women's unique needs, but found that it wasn't enough. And I stepped off the board of that foundation and created Women's Brain Health Initiative in 2012. We're a national charity with two focuses in mind. One is to level that research playing field. It's not that we don't want to look at men's brains. We just want to make sure that the scientists are considering women's brains as well and what those unique differences are. But also to educate the public about what we can do to protect our cognitive vitality as we age, because we are learning that there are things you can do to prevent and delay diseases like Alzheimer's.
And it's intriguing that much of the research is traditionally centered on men. Why do you think there's been this focus and what impact does it have on women's health?
So it's not unique to brain health. Over 20 years ago, in heart and stroke, women were presenting their symptoms slightly differently and they weren't being recognized as having heart failure until they started looking at men and women differently. So it's not new to brain health, but the brain is very complex. It is now a focus of more people's study, particularly as the population ages, because with dementia, age is still a big risk factor. But it was easier to study male than females, meaning you don't have to take the hormone cycle into account. So typically science is expensive. And even at the lab rat level of study, it was easier to study the male rat because you don't need five times the number of rats to discount for the hormone cycle. So study male and apply it to female. But again, the statistics today are showing women are more susceptible. So you can't just discount half the population, study male, and say that it's going to benefit the female as well. And we know today that women's symptoms can present differently. And I'll give you an example of that. So one of the things that they do to test for Alzheimer's is they give you a list of words. 10 minutes later, they've asked you to repeat that list of words. Well, we know today, because we're looking at it differently, that women retain their verbal memory longer than men. So by the time a woman forgets that list of words, she's likely further down that slope towards Alzheimer's than a man is. So we may be getting diagnosed later, or maybe our tests have to be different in order to understand why, not just why we are more susceptible, but, you know, what is in our physiology that makes us different than men so that we can address the questions for women differently than men to find answers.
So I understand that the six pillars of brain health are a cornerstone of your initiative. Can you explain what these pillars are and their significance?
Yeah. So as I mentioned, education is equally as important, and it takes a long time for the science to come up with the answers, right? So we wanted to educate people about what they could do to protect their brain health. As I said, up to 40% of all cases of dementia can be avoided through lifestyle. Well, lifestyle is something that we can control. So we wanted to understand what those lifestyle risk factors were, or what are the things that we can do to protect our brain health. And that became the six pillars of brain health. So quickly what those are, because I'm sure your audience wants to know. Mental stimulation. You have to exercise your brain like it's a muscle. This develops new neural pathways. So as one part falls off, other parts can take over. So mental stimulation, exercise, physical activity, important for blood flow and oxygen flow to the brain, keeps the brain more robust. Physical exercise is important. Nutrition. We do know now that what you eat crosses the blood-brain barrier. So it's very important to manage your nutrition intake. The best diet today for this is something called the MIND diet, which is a combination of the Mediterranean style diet. Most people know what that is: fruit, vegetables, lean protein, olive oil, red wine. That's debatable. It does say one glass of red wine is okay, not a bottle, but there has been evidence showing that alcohol is not good for your brain health. So that one's debatable. Combined with the DASH diet, which is a low sodium to control hypertension. So the MIND diet is easier to follow than the Mediterranean diet. There's also a cheat day, so people are more likely to stick with it. But nutrition is very important. Sleep. Sleep consolidates the memories in your brain, as well as eliminates the toxins in your brain, which can cause damage. 7 to 8 hours every single night. Pulling an all-nighter and sleeping the next day is not good. This is something that is required every single night. Sleep, social interaction, very important to keep your mind active and engaged. It helps reduce depression and loneliness, which can be precursors to dementia. And also stress reduction. Stress prematurely ages all your cells, including your brain cells. So whatever you can do to manage your stress is also important. So those are the six pillars of brain health. And it's a combination of doing little habits in all of those things that are going to give you the strongest protective effect. So while eating blueberries, for example, is good for your brain because of the antioxidants, just saying I added blueberries to my breakfast, I'm good now, right? It's against all these six pillars that you have to engage in healthy habits. That will provide the strongest protective effect.
I do love these six pillars because not only do they protect your brain health, but they actually will give you a happier life in general. So, I mean, it's just great all around. And getting this crucial information out there is so important. So how does your organization disseminate these insights across Canada to as many women as possible?
So we have a number of ways that we do that. One is obviously through our website. There's lots of great information there. But we also produce something called Mind Over Matter magazine, and that's with support from Brain Canada, which is part of Health Canada or funded by Health Canada. And it's loaded with great information all about the things you can do to stay brain healthy longer. It's free at the moment. So all you have to do is go online. There's a form to fill out. It's called Mind Over Matter. And you know what? We found that Women like to take in the magazine to their book club or social group, and they've asked us for an additional number of copies so that they could make the articles the next month's mandatory reading, which is interesting. So we also have a social club program. Again, it's free while quantities last. You can just go on the website and download the form, and we're happy to send them. Again, while quantities last. But we also developed with, thanks to funding from PHAC, the Public Health Agency of Canada, a Brain Fit app. And what that is it's all these little micro habits that I talked about are available with all the evidence behind why we say, as an example, eat the rainbow of foods because it maximizes your antioxidant intake. We have all these little micro habits that you can track, and tracking your habits makes it easier to maintain them. The app is free. It's available on Google as well as iOS. But interestingly, we now have some stats. We don't know individually, for privacy reasons, what like you might be downloading as the habits you want to track, do more of or do less of. But we know generally what over 35,000 users are saying. And the number one habit that they're downloading, or number one pillar that they're downloading habits against, is nutrition. And the number one habit happens to be water intake.
Oh, interesting.
Because staying hydrated is very good for your brain health. But that's what people want to track. But exercise is number two, and mental stimulation is actually number three. So we're getting some interesting statistics. And if you are on iOS, if say you have an Apple Watch, we now link to HealthKit. So as an example, if the number of steps that you want to track is happening anyways on your Apple Watch, you no longer have to track it on your Brain Fit app. It does it automatically. So it's all about user experience. We want to make it easy for people to use the app because we think that that will help them. So we've got a lot of different ways that we get the information across to the public. And right now these resources are free. So I encourage people to take advantage of them. So that is Brain Fit Habit Tracker if you are in the App Store.
That's amazing. And 35,000 people on it. That's incredible. We're going to take a quick break, Lynn, and we'll be right back to continue this discussion after this quick commercial break. Don't know a thing at all, ain't it? Yeah, baby, you don't know a thing about me.
You don't know a thing about me. More with Candace Sampson and What She Said coming up on 105.9 The Region. Welcome back to What She Said with Candace Sampson on 105.9 The Region. Don't know a thing at all, ain't it? And it's something, y'all, when somebody tells you something about you,
think that they know you more than you do, so you take it down another pill to swallow. We're back with Lynn Puzzlins from Women's Brain Health Initiative. And we're discussing women's brain health, obviously. And we were just talking about Brain Fit, which is an incredible app people can download to their phones free. For people who are listening, though, Lynn, who are either living with caring for somebody with conditions like dementia, or perhaps, you know, have recently had a diagnosis themselves, is there any advice you can offer to them?
So these tools are great for early cognitive impairment, stages of early cognitive impairment, as well as for caregivers. And caregiving is extremely stressful, and caregivers often put themselves last. So I say that these resources are more important for a caregiver than just the general public because, again, they don't eat properly, they don't socialize properly, they don't exercise properly. They're very focused on who they are caring for. And again, we talked about stress management being critical in terms of managing your brain health. So I encourage caregivers and those with early stages of cognitive decline to please take advantage of the same resources. We think they will be very helpful.
And you know, you're a very driven person, Lynn. So I think it's worth pointing out here that you also have a student program, Brainable. So that sounds fascinating to me. Can you tell us a bit about it and the objectives of it?
So the reason that we created a program, this program right now, again, it's free and available in Ontario. It's geared to kids in grades 5 through 8, and it's taught in English and French, and all the resources are in English and French. And the reason that we wanted to reach out to a younger audience is because, as I said, the earlier you engage in these healthy choices, the stronger the protective effect will be. The program is called Brainable, and you can just go on brainable.ca to see if there's availability for the class for your children if they're in that age group. But, you know, we analyzed some results recently, and it was quite frightening. These kids were asked to submit a survey at the end of the program. And by the end of this June, 20,000 kids will have received this program. And the surveys were sent to researchers at Queen's University, and the results were incredibly interesting and quite consistent between the kids in grade 5 as 8. So that's 10 to 14. And what the results showed was we asked these kids, what's the one thing based on what you've learned that you think you need to do, you know, more of to protect your brain health? And not surprising, they said exercise. They recognized they're not exercising enough. But what was frightening was when they answered the question, what's the one thing you want to do less of to protect your brain health? And the comments came back, again, very consistent. They recognize they're on social media too much, that it's harmful for their brain, but as a result, they're not sleeping. Now, sleep is even more important for a developing brain. I mentioned it as a pillar of brain health, but it is critical for kids in that age to get 9 to 11 hours of sleep a night. And they're not, because they're waiting for that next Snapchat or whatever comes through on their phones, and they're taking their phones to bed. They may be putting it under their pillow so that they don't miss anything, but they're not getting enough sleep. So what's frightening is that they recognize this by the time they're 10, and it's already ingrained. It's like addictive style behavior. We got to reach these kids younger, and we've got to educate the parents and community at large that excess social media is harmful for these kids' brains. And if these kids, mental health is being impacted. Remember, these are the kids that are going to look after us as we get older. And they're going to take over, you know, business and government. And if we don't protect these kids today, I'm fearful what's going to happen in the future. So, you know, we're working now with the government to try and get these resources into more kids' hands and at earlier ages.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, obviously, I mean, we're seeing it in the with the Ontario government. They're bringing in a ban on cell phones. How they're going to enforce that, I have no idea. But I think everybody can agree that they should not be in the classrooms, that kids absolutely need less of these devices in their lives. So beyond the Women's Brain Health Initiative and Brainable, I feel like you probably have something else you're working on. Is there something else we should be looking forward to?
We do have events, which I encourage people if they have the ability to come. And we are actually working on, it's not finalized yet, but we are actually working on a Women's Brain Health Summit for next spring in the Toronto area. It'll be a 2-day conference filled with all kinds of panel discussions and presenters. We're all about taking the science and making it digestible, so easy for the public to understand. This is the first time that we know of in Canada for a Women's Brain Health Summit that's geared to the public. There's scientific ones, obviously, but we, again, believe very much in getting this information into people's hands so they can do something about it. That's sort of our area of specialty. So we're hoping that we can pull that off.
And so to be clear, this summit is for the general public. It's not for experts, you know, doctors and psychologists. It's for the general public.
Right. I mean, they might benefit too. Again, we have a different way of communicating the information. But, you know, these Mind Over Matter magazines that I was talking about, you know, we have doctors asking for copies for their clinics, again, for the same reason, because if they're looking for resources to help their patients as well, and we, you know, have created this niche, like I said, of expertise, because it's all evidence-informed, but it's digestible information.
I love everything that you're doing. I'm so thrilled that you joined me today. How can people find out more and get involved?
So again, through our website is access to most of the resources that we have. The events are on there, the upcoming events that we have, as well as these resources. So it's womensbrainhealth.org. And again, that will lead you to Mind Over Matter. It will lead you to Brainable. We have videos. We have, some people like to learn, you know, by watching rather than by reading. We've got a podcast series as well. So again, I hope people take advantage of these resources. And of course, donations are always welcome.
All right. Fantastic. I'm going to put all those links when this goes live on the blog, on the website. And thank you so much for joining me today, Lynn.
Thanks, Candace.
It's time for Saturday Night at the Movies with Ann Brody, and we've got a full weekend, so let's jump right in. Let's talk about Unfrosted. This looks super campy, a little bit outrageous, and a really crazy big cast.
Oh, no kidding, eh? How on earth? Well, it's Jerry Seinfeld. I guess he can afford to pay them all. But it concerns the battle in the 60s between Kellogg's and Post to see who can come up with a shelf-stable cake, hence Pop-Tarts. and unfrosted. So it looks behind the scenes, and it's funny. But Jerry's getting a lot of pushback. Have you noticed in the media today that he said that comedy is dead because of left-wing extremist political correctness? So he's getting a lot of abuse, just what he was complaining about. And they took the bait. It was the funniest thing. So it's going to be really interesting to see how it affects Netflix numbers for the movie.
Without seeing it, I don't have much of an opinion on it. I did see his comment yesterday, which was timely, considering an image put out by a hockey player with two bears, which was incredibly offensive. So it was interesting timing that he came out with that, considering what else was happening in sort of the media space. But let's reserve judgment until we see it, I guess.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Melissa McCarthy's there, I just want to say, and I'll watch anything with her.
I do love her. I do love her. Yeah. So I want to talk about something, though, that I am seeing a lot of chatter about. Let's talk about baby reindeer for a second, because lots of people are saying it's highly disturbing.
It sure is. I can't get it out of my bloodstream. Edinburgh writer and comedian Richard Gadd produced, directs, and stars in it, and it's his own story. It's basically two sexual stalking things that happened to him in his life and how they affected him. The first one, I'm not going in order of the story, but the first one was a rape by a man, a brutal rape, and it's shown in incredible detail in the film. I could not watch that. And then it's about a woman who stalked him. Now, according to the Hollywood Reporter, this woman, who's unnamed, sent him 41,000 emails, 744 tweets, 100 pages of letters, and 350 hours of voicemails. But she now claims, because of the backlash she's getting, that he stalked her. So, you know, he's a bit of a weakling. He never laid his terms down, like, leave me alone, until it was too late. He sort of felt sorry for her, so he interacted a little bit. The bar where he worked and where she came every single day refused to bar her because they enjoyed watching him squirm. But it is just, if you are sensitive to anything, don't watch it. But if you want to be in on the current chit chat, you know, that's what people are talking about. Baby reindeer. Oh my God.
Absolutely. That is the online water cooler. Everybody is gathered around discussing baby reindeer right now. I have yet to watch it. Don't know that I will, because sometimes these things just disturb me too much.
I don't think it's going to suit you. It's kind of nauseating at times, but it's a true story.
All right. Well, we've got enough truth in our life every day with the news. Let's talk about Catching Fire, the story of Anita Pallenberg.
Yes. Now, she's a German-born actress and singer who basically hypnotized the Stones back in the 60s. She had an affair with Brian Jones. And, you know, they were drug addicts and alcohol addicts and everything. But she couldn't take his violent rages. He had, as we've sort of discovered later, he had mental problems. So, you know, and he died shortly after. Well, Keith started protecting her, and then they began a 20-year relationship, and Mick went after her, but she rejected him. So she and Keith Richards had two children, and the son, Marlon, is producing this film. It's in theaters and on demand, and it's about the 60s and the excess, particularly in the UK. And, you know, at a time when we didn't know the result of widespread drug use and the hallucinogens and psychedelics and all that on people. And I mean, we know better now, but there were a lot of deaths. A lot of young, promising artists died because of innocence and naivete. So she is a fascinating character. If you watch this, you'll see she's a magnet. She's very beautiful. She's extremely thoughtful and provocative. And she would just walk into a room and own it. And she died just a couple of years ago of alcohol-related problems. So now it's gossipy and it's kind of florid, but it is so interesting. And it raises up that sadness of all these lives lost, all these young lives lost.
Where is that playing?
Theaters and on demand.
We've got a few seconds left. Do you want to touch on A Man in Full?
Yeah, Jeff Daniels. Wow. I think this is his best performance ever. He stars as a powerful Atlanta real estate company owner, and he has every luxury you can imagine. He's extremely wealthy. The bank comes after him. He owes them $800 million. He refuses to pay. Yeah. And it's what he goes through and his complete psychopathy as far as his finances and the way he treats people. And it's from David R. E. Kelly, so you know it's going to be well-written, well-directed. But, I mean, Daniels will just blow your mind.
And that's another one on Netflix, right?
Yes.
All right, fantastic. All right, Ann, you've got these. It's a really full week, as we said. So you've got these and more over on whatshesaidtalk.com, and we will see you next week.
We'll see you next week, Candace. Take care.
More with Candace Sampson and What She Said coming up on 105.9 The Region. Welcome back to What She Said with Candace Sampson on 105.9 The Region. Please don't stop the music, music,
music. As part of What She Said's ongoing partnership with New Roots Herbal, we're kicking off an exciting two-part series on skincare today. In this first interview, we're exploring internal skincare, that is, what you put inside your body to promote healthy skin. Joining me is Dr. Dasha Leniva, a naturopathic doctor with extensive experience in holistic skincare. Dr. Leniva, it's great to have you with us here to dive into how our diet can influence our skin's health.
It's so great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Could you share with us some key nutrients and supplements that are essential for maintaining healthy skin from within?
Yeah, absolutely. So for the most part, healthy skin starts with what's going on the inside. If there's any gut dysbiosis, inflammation, if you have an increased stress response, that's our cortisol, or poor toxin metabolism, our skin will show us. This sometimes manifests with acne, eczema, psoriasis, or just dull, aged-looking skin. So some key nutrients that we can add into our diet, both from supplements and from food, are essential fatty acids like omega-3s, omega-6s, and omega-7s. So omega-3s, these we know are found in our fatty fish, flax, walnut, chia, and some species of algae. So omega-6s are things like barrage oil, and omega-9, also plentiful in flax. Additionally, we can use vitamin C, collagen. This can support skin elasticity and firmness. Vitamin E and vitamin A are also essential. Vitamin A, we can use orally or topically. And then zinc and hyaluronic acid are also going to be great. Those are all building blocks for collagen, all going to support that nice, natural skin production.
So for our listeners then who prefer to get their nutrients from food, what are some good dietary sources for these skin-benefiting nutrients?
Yeah, so as an overview, you want to focus on foods that are high in antioxidants, healthy fats like those omega-3s that we talked about, protein as well, and I can tell you right now that most of us are really not getting enough, and fiber is really important too, just for maintaining that good gut microbiome, and micronutrients like vitamin A, C, E, zinc, and so on. So what does this look like? It looks like salmon, walnuts, flax seeds. These are all rich in omega-3s and omega-6s. If you want to get fancy, sea buckthorn berries are a really great source of omega-7s. And healthy fats like avocados, walnuts, sweet potatoes are great. These are high in beta carotene. Bell peppers, broccoli, basically all the veggies that our mom told us to eat growing up. Those are all wonderful for our skin, and really deeply pigmented berries and fruits like blackberries, blueberries, things like that. Those are all very great. Green tea, is really has really powerful antioxidants in it, and zinc-rich foods like oysters, pumpkin seeds, cashews, probiotics as well, like yogurt, kefir, sauerkraut, kimchi, things like that. And of course, our leafy greens and nuts and seeds are going to be really important as well. So when you're eating a diet that's really helpful for your skin, you essentially see there's a lot where we can choose from. So we're never really going to get bored for supporting our skin.
We hear a lot about hydration for skin health. And, you know, there's a lot of literature out there about how much you should be drinking every day. Can you expand on what else water does for the skin and any additional dietary tips you might have for people listening today?
Yeah, so hydration is super important, right? So it's a fine balance, right? Because I have patients coming in saying, I only drink about one cup of water a day, which is definitely, that's way too little. But also when you're getting up to like 5-6 liters a day, that is actually can be damaging for your body. And it's really annoying to go pee all the time. Usually getting a little over 2 liters of water is sufficient. And again, dehydration is one of the many causes of dull skin. After all, the human body is about 60% water. And you can also get water through eating fruits and veggies as well. They have quite a high water content too. And things like that. And some other actionable things you can do are helping with sleep. So getting enough sleep, maintaining stress, things like that.
Absolutely. I'm with you on the sleep. There is one thing I've noticed, particularly as I've aged. I used to be in my 20s, be able to get away with less sleep and still look fairly normal. But if I try to pull that off anymore, one bad night of sleep ages me about 10 years. I swear it does. With the complexity of skin health, though, what role do supplements like collagen play? And who might benefit from adding that to their regimen?
Who might benefit? Well, I mean, everyone can benefit from some collagen, right? But most of the research done on collagen has been with people with fine lines and wrinkles. And usually supplementing collagen can really help eliminate those. However, like anything, it's not this magic supplement that you can take and your skin's going to be beautiful and it's going to reverse your age by 20 years, right? These are just little things that prevent the degradation of our skin and will slow down aging a little bit, right? So we're not necessarily trying to reverse things too much with supplements. We're trying to maintain and make that aging process a little bit slower. And it might not work for everyone, but people that are generally older and have a little bit more sun damage and aging damage will probably see results a little bit quicker.
So yeah, it's like anything, right? You can't just one thing is not going to make the difference. It's like a puzzle. It all has to work together. So you do have to eat healthy. You do have to be hydrating. And collagen can play a part in that. Where do we get collagen without supplementation? What kind of foods do we get collagen from?
Yeah, so there are some foods that we can get collagen from. So bone broth, that's been a trend for the past few years now. That has a lot of collagen in it. If we eat foods that are high in amino acids, we have those building blocks to produce collagen, as well as eating foods that are high in vitamin A, C, E, and zinc. Those are all sort of, especially vitamin C, sort of precursor to collagen formation.
Before we wrap up then, do you have any final tips for someone looking to improve their skin health from the inside out?
Yeah, absolutely. So my biggest tip is get your basics in order. Manage stress, get adequate sleep, have a nice balanced diet that consists of enough protein, healthy fats, fiber, antioxidants rich in your diet. And then use your skincare properly, right? So oftentimes we buy a whole bunch of things and actually don't really know how to use them. For example, hyaluronic acid. Most people don't know that they're supposed to apply it to damp skin. Otherwise, it can make things worse. You're not supposed to combine benzoyl peroxide and retinols together because that sort of renders both of them useless. Another thing is don't wash your face with super hot water or take super hot showers because that actually degrades the skin barrier and that leads to unhealthy, dry, dull looking skin and things like that. But biggest tip, get the stress, get the sleep, get the diet in order, and exercise too. That's going to be really important as well.
All right. Dasha, thank you so much for sharing your expertise today. I hope everyone will join us next time as we shift our focus to the external skincare. But in the meantime, listeners can find New Roots Herbal products at a health food store near them simply by going to newrootsherbal.com. And we will see you next month, Dasha.
See you then.
Smoke like chimneys, but give you their kidneys. Yeah, friends come in handy, but family is family.
In this next interview, we have the privilege of hearing from Dr. Barbara Landau, a distinguished lawyer, psychologist, and mediator who has significantly impacted the way separations are handled in Canada. Dr. Landau, who was honored with the Order of Canada for her pioneering work in mediation, is here to share her insights on how to effectively communicate with children about divorce. Barbara, thank you so much for joining us today.
I'm delighted to be here. Thank you.
Could you start by telling us a bit about separation pathways and how it differs from traditional litigation in handling divorces, especially concerning the well-being of children?
I think that the well-being of children was the motivation for creating separation pathways. What's really important is that up to 85% of people go to court unrepresented because they just can't afford to deal with their separation with professional help. So we decided to create a not-for-profit that will soon be a charity that is focused on helping people to resolve their disputes around separation in the interests of reducing conflict for their children in the most simple, affordable way. So we start off with a free intake call with each person, a free consultation, and then they have a separation planning meeting, a meeting to focus on what are their issues and what do they see as the best way to resolve those issues. And they do that with a very affordable family professional. They then choose their process. Most people choose mediation. And that's a process where one person helps them to have a reasonable conversation focused on the issues and the information needed to reach an agreement. And then they have, again, a very affordable, when they have an agreement, which they will get to in a short space of time, they have independent legal advice just to be sure that everything was done properly and they can rely on that agreement. It's turned into an actual separation agreement. All this is done with professionals who've agreed to work at a reduced rate because they've got couples that are committed to doing this in a respectful way. So this is a wonderful process. It allows people to continue to be parenting partners in the future if they have children, and if they no longer or if they don't have children, at least to handle the process in a respectful way.
As somebody who has walked through the divorce process in the courts, I can tell you that it is the 10th circle of hell. So this sounds like a much better option. Divorce obviously can be a tumultuous experience for children. So from your extensive experience, what are some of the most significant effects of divorce on children and how can parents mitigate these impacts?
That's really a wonderful question. Partly it depends on the age of the child and partly it depends on their personality. But just to assume that for children, their parents are the center of their universe. Fortunately, at least until they become teenagers. So for younger children, the parents are the people that they look to as their support, as their loving caretakers. And when the parents get into a contested conflict where they demean each other, they have angry conversations, the children often feel at a real loss. It can interfere with their sleep. It can interfere with their concentration at school. They can be very embarrassed about telling their friends because it feels humiliating. They're not sure how their lives are going to work. And they often retreat to their bedroom with a pillow over their head and the radio on. I have a wonderful example of a child that told me that what it felt like when it was an 8-year-old, that what it felt like when his parents separated was that he was on a roller coaster without a steering wheel and without any wheel or any brakes. And he had had real difficulty concentrating in school. It was interfering with any social life. He didn't want to invite friends over because he was embarrassed about it. And fortunately, those parents decided to end their court battle and come to mediation. And when I explained to the parents about the impact of their conflict on the kids, they really shifted and they made a priority of supporting the good parenting that each of them had. Because very often people have reasonable parenting skills. They may not get along with each other, but fortunately, until kids are teenagers, they don't judge us. They rely on us. So if I talk a little bit about how children, by the way, older children, the way it impacts them is many of them decide not to marry or they decide not to have children because they don't want their children to go through this kind of experience. And so if I have to talk about how best to help parents, I tell my clients that what they need to think about is that one day their children are going to explain to their grandchildren how they handled their separation. They are now writing the story that will be told to their grandchildren. What's the story they want to write? So I ask them to think about the fact that they're now the parenting board of directors. This is a board of directors conversation. Rather than expressing anger and hostility and demeaning each other, they need to focus on problem solving. They've got some significant issues they have to work out. And what's the best way that those responsible people for their children can work out a plan that works for them? What will make sense for them in terms of the children's sense of time and their needs? And do they have special educational needs or healthcare needs? What's the best way to do that? I ask them always to, if they're feeling angry or they're feeling hurt, to ask a question rather than make an attack. You know, ask for clarification. You know, when you said that, I was kind of wondering what you meant or what your intention was. Separate intention from impact, because sometimes someone did not intend to be hurtful, but they don't recognize that they've hurt your feelings. I ask parents to think about the fact that while their marriage may not have lasted or their relationship may not have lasted, for the children, parents are forever. And they are part of each parent. And when you criticize the other parent, you're criticizing part of that child. So I ask them to really think about the fact that it will impact the child's self-esteem. I ask people to try to accommodate each other where possible, where it's reasonable, because people have different work pressures, they have different time schedules, and work out a plan that makes sense. Don't work out a plan that is based on, I want to get more than what you got, or if I get this amount of time, maybe I can reduce my child support, which is always the faint hope clause, because it's very unlikely to happen that way. I ask them to think about a plan that makes sense from their children's perspective and to try to think about it from the child's point of view. So, for example, kids worry about who's going to take care of my pets. Am I going to be able to get to my hockey practice or my dance lesson? Will I be able to invite my children, my friends over from school? Will they be welcome? Also, think about extended family members. Parents are working hard today to make a living, and they often work more than one job or work extended hours. Rather than drawing biological lines in the sand and excluding family members because they're part of the other person's family, think about whether they're important comfort people for the children. So I welcome grandparents, cousins, uncles, aunts. Try to make birthday parties a celebration of the child rather than a celebration of who's line in the sand. Now, of course, if there are cases of domestic violence, if there's threats to people's security, you want to think about that differently. But what we love about mediation and about separation pathways is that we start by screening for domestic violence and for those kind of concerns. We ask people to bring their best effort to the process. And we reward them by giving them a fixed price package and by giving them a timeline that we think is reasonable. If they need a little more time, then we accommodate that. But we ask them to come prepared to bring the documents and the information they need and to come with a focus on making the best plan for their children. It will be in their best interest. What they're going to find is that they have fewer sleepless nights. They have fewer anxiety about how are they going to pay for this process? How are they going to be able to have a place to live where the children can visit comfortably? Instead, they're spending their money wisely. They're spending it on reaching a reasonable agreement in a reasonable period of time. And we're talking about a few months rather than several years. We're talking about a shared small cost. I think that the biggest surprise that parents have is that they end up recognizing that the other person is their best parenting partner. And that for the children is a blessing.
Well, I would wish this for anybody going through the divorce process right now. It sounds like a much better process than going through the courts, which is highly contentious. So I want people to be able to reach out to you, find out more. I know you share information on your website as well. So where can people connect with you?
If they look for www.separationpathways.ca, they're going to find a lot of very helpful information.
All right, fantastic. Thank you so much for joining me today, Dr. Landau.
You might look just like them, that don't mean you like them, but you love them.
More with Candace Sampson and What She Said coming up on 105.9 The Region. Welcome back to What She Said with Candace Sampson on 105.9 The Region.
I'm pleased to be welcoming back Punita Chitwal Varma, a renowned writer and food advocate whose work inspires us to embrace a low-waste, earth-friendly lifestyle. Punita is the founder of the popular blog Maple and Marigold, and her new book, Good Food, Healthy Planet, offers a practical guide to cooking delicious, climate-conscious meals. Punita, welcome back to What She Said.
Hi, Candace. I am so excited to see you.
We've been talking about this for so long. I can't believe we're actually conducting the interview now. I'm so thrilled that your book is out. So it's about making sustainable eating easy and enjoyable. So can you share what inspired you to focus on this approach and the impact you hope to have?
I wrote this book as a how-to guide, Candace, because there is so much of information out there, right? And it can get overwhelming. Do I feed my kids healthy food? Do I feed myself in a certain way? Like, do I cook at home? There's so much out there that it can get overwhelming. So, of course, I had to sit down and write a book about how we can take the overwhelm out. And I know that's not a word, but I have to use it in this context because it is. It can feel that there is so much that we have to do. And through this book, through Good Food, Healthy Planet, I am hoping that it simplifies and eases this burden of feeding ourselves good, healthy, sustainable, delicious food that's comforting, that's great for our bellies and for our brain, and it's all great for the planet too, because one works if we support the other. Our health, our impact is manageable if we manage our impact on the planet together.
Absolutely. And I love that you said overwhelmed. I think that's, we're all feeling that. I would take just feeling whelmed. Let's leave the over out of it. I would settle for just
yes, and that's exactly what I was getting to, because it is, you know, I wish it was a word, whelmed, because I feel I need to be able to manage so many things. I have two kids. My kids are older now, so their needs are different. I work full time. I'm a writer and I do a variety of things, TV and media and workshops and classes. But it always all comes together to what's good for us and good for the planet too. And I can get overwhelmed. Like I am in this space. I call myself, like my kids call me, a food waste warrior. And so I have a system. I wash the veggies and wash them in the sink, wrap them in dish towels. I have a system to not have food waste. And I get overwhelmed constantly. So for someone who's not in this space professionally and personally, I totally get it. And so I'm hoping with this book, we can make it less too much and make it just right so that we can make a difference.
Absolutely. And you talk about eating with benefits in your book, a framework that makes sustainability more achievable. So can you explain this concept and how it can be applied in our daily cooking habits?
So eating with benefits, and of course, I had to have a cheeky, funny name for something that that can be difficult for people. So it's five guiding principles that help people, you know, as they're walking down the grocery store aisle, shopping for dinner and coming back home, cooking and eating. These five principles will help people as they go about making their choices every day around their kitchen, at home, around food. Because guess what? All of these, the five principles, are based on medical research, climate science, and also what generations of grandmas have known all along, that if we eat more whole grains, eat less meat, half your meat is how I call it in the book, eat a diverse palette of fruits and veg and grains and nuts and seeds and fermented foods. Grandma's new. Eat your sauerkraut, eat your yogurt, dahi as I grew up calling it. We knew we had to eat that fermented food along with our main meal. And I bring all of that together in the framework that I call eating with benefits, because we need to have fun with it too, right?
And your book includes over 80 recipes that emphasize low waste and meat-free options. Mm. I realize this question is going to be like asking you to pick your favorite child, but if you can only share one recipe that you would love everybody to try in your book right now, which one would you pick?
So I was asked this question last week when the book launched. I did a whole bunch of media. I was asked this question in every interview. And I had a different answer in each interview because I can't pick my favorite, right? It's like asking me to choose between my two kids. So I have a section that is my favorite. So if you've bought my book, skim through to the dips and condiments section. So I have a favorite section. I don't have a favorite recipe. That's where I'm going with this. And that section with the condiments and the chutneys is my favorite because it makes what people might think is boring, mundane food, right? The fried, the steamed veggies or the broccoli or the Brussels sprouts or plain yogurt. Those are what people often think is, oh my God, I have to eat this because it's good for me, but it's so boring. I wish I had this delicious bowl of something, anything else. So the dips and chutneys and condiments section is the stuff that you can put on top, use to dip. My girlfriend loves the roasted peanut chutney because she says that's the only way she eats her celery. She despises celery, but she enjoys it because it's got the chutney to dip it in, right? I've got a dukkha in there, which is a really nice crunchy topping. There's an oat topping in there too that goes on top of steamed veggies and it's delicious. So add all of these things on. They're the sparkle to what might be boring and mundane to some, right? Because we got to eat our veggies.
It's so much better than going out and buying a million condiments that end up going to landfill. So I agree with you on that one. I have my copy. I can't wait to jump into it. We're going to be giving away some copies on Instagram, so people to follow along. But I want people to be able to go out and get the book and keep up with you because you're always sharing great information, Punita. So where can they do that?
Maple and Marigold. That's my Instagram handle. People sign up for my newsletter because I'm trying to step away from social media slowly. And so I have a weekly newsletter that comes out. They can sign up for that on mapleandmarigold.com. And yes, that's the best way. Sunday mornings, I send out my weekly note to everyone. And right, buy my book, read the book. Let's cook from the book.
All right, Punita, thank you so much for joining me.
That's it for What She Said this week. Stay up to date with our newsletter by signing up at whatshesaidtalk.com and be sure to follow on social at What She Said Talk on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for videos of these interviews and more. You can also catch me on TikTok at Candace Said. Finally, be sure to subscribe to What She Said with Candace Sampson on Apple and Spotify to catch past episodes and extended podcasts. I'll be back next week with another What She Said on 105.9 The Region.
I'm feeling good.
Previous episodes of What She Said on 105.9theregion.com.